Çok kendim. Sahanavavatu, Sahanavunaktu, Sahaviryam karavavahai, Tejasvinavadhitamastu maviddvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Okay, let me chant these shlokas from 21 to
6.
26. Okay, while I'm going to share the screen, obviously ignore the Sanskrit font in there because I think there are a lot of mistakes in that. But we will go through this. I'm going to read from the original what I have. केवलं नाम रूपाभ्याम यदुभिः सह पाण्डवाः भवतो दर्शनं यर्हि ऋषीके ऋषीकाणामिवेशितुः नेयं शोभिष्यते तत्र यथेदानीं गदाधर त्वत्पदैरङ्किता भाति स्वलक्षणविलक्षितैः. So when your name and form are not with the Yadus and Pandavas, they all become like the body without the soul. O Lord with the mace, this earth will not shine as it does now, as it would not be adorned by your feet and would not have the great symbols that you are holding in your hand. That's unstained, unsaid in that. Ime janapada sruddhaha supakvau Shadi virudaha vanadrinadyudantavanto hyo ye dante tava vikshatayihi atha vishvesha vishvatman vishvamurte svakeshume sneha pashamimam chindhi drudham pandushu vrushnishu. This territory, with its forests, hills, ripe crops and vegetation, will flourish only when they receive your benign glances. So, Lord of the universe, soul of the universe, personification of the universe, please cut off the strong bondage that I have to the clan of Pandu and Vrishni. Twayi me nanya vishaya Matir madhupate sakrut rati mudvahata dvadha gange vaughamudanvati. Sri Krishna, Krishna Sakha, Vrushna Yusha Bhava Nidru, Rajan Yavamsha Dahana, Napavarka Virya, Govinda Godvija Surartihara Vatara Yogeshwara Kila Guru Bhagavan Namaste. I'm very sorry I've not been able to say it properly today. I apologize for that. O Lord of Honey, let my mind not go to any other aspects near other than you, and let it be flowing towards you like the Ganges flows towards the sea. O Lord Krishna, friend of Arjuna, greatest in the clan of Vrishni, you are the fire that burns the princes who harm this earth. O Govinda, who has taken birth to relieve the distress of all cows, all Brahmins and all gods, I salute you, O teacher, O God. I think that's the conclusion of Kunti Stuti. So,
what is the last one? What is the last? You got one more slide, right? Oh, no, that's just...
No, that's my notes, what I had written okay. down something. That's,
okay, it's 26.
Can you know that? Yeah. Okay. So with that, I am going to stop sharing, and Ajay, over to you. You can take the screen.
Yeah, okay. Thanks, Kuti. I'm just trying to figure out what did I share. I can share screen. Do you mind, Rajesh, if you can pull that up because I'm struggling?
I will not be able to do it, Ajay, because it's on my phone and I don't have it on my laptop.
Okay, that's a shame. And let me try again.
You want to email it or put it on a
What are you
group?
talking
I'll
about?
pull that if I
Is the PDF?
can't figure it out. It wants me to kind of figure out some security settings, which is just going to be.
Hold on.
Do you have WhatsApp, goods?
Yeah,
Yeah.
I'm looking to see. So is it in the Satsang group? Hold
No,
on.
I haven't sent it. I'm just gonna forward it.
Okay. Well, is it a Microsoft
No,
file?
it's just a PDF. It's just a PDF.
PDF is good. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, let me just forward it to you. I just sent it to
Sounds good.
Rajesh.
Yeah.
I normally don't have WhatsApp on my laptop, actually.
Yeah, no, I yeah, no, it's even done. You should get it in the next 10 seconds. It's gone. So, did you get it?
Yeah. Yes, I do have it.
Okay, we can just put that up. Just one slide. Sorry about all this.
No problem. We want to see it, so we will wait.
Feeling the pressure suddenly. Thanks, Raj. Okay,
There we go.
perfect. I think we have it. I'm trying to move my. Okay. All right. So I think the reason I pulled it up together was I have been reading these stories and trying to make sense of it's a lot of like I think like all stories it is in praise of the Lord. Right, and so a lot of it is it's really around sort of
Hold on, 1 second.
give me one
Sorry.
second, give me 1 second, guys.
Am I sharing the right screen? No.
It's just coming.
Okay.
Not yet. No,
We saw
not
it
yet.
once,
No,
though,
we
for
did see your first slide. Yeah.
a. Okay, I will do that.
It's kind of, it came through, but it's kind of gone.
Okay, I think it should come. It should be okay
Yeah,
now.
that's
Yeah,
good.
we're good. Yeah,
Yeah,
perfect.
got it.
Yeah. So what I was saying was that part of the reason I put this together was because I've been reading these stutis and some of the translations on the internet, and I was trying to get my head around sort of what is the import of these 26 shlokas, which is the first stuti, I believe, in the Bhagavatam. In the first canto. And I recall Rajesh's comment on the satsang that there isn't that much interest in these stutis. But I have to say, Rajesh, I found this very, very useful and enlightening in a certain way. So I just pulled together this slide just for summarizing it for myself and for this group. And this is really all about the 26 praises to Krishna by Queen Kunti. Once everything had ended, and it's quite a nice kind of rendition from her to Lord Krishna. So I tried to reflect on it, and this is the summary that I came up with, which is what I call the three levels of bhakti. And these are my words. I mean, some of this I'm sure can have better vocabulary. But the first one is really the materialistic bhakti, where if you reflect on chapter 7 and 8, this is really where the arthas and the artharthi bhaktas are situated, and you could also call them mudhas, which I'm told is mudhas is kind of called stupid, but I think it really means stupid into a 100, as somebody mentioned to me. So these are people who are actually seeking happiness. And they sort of know what they want, or they seem to know what they want. So they want wealth, they want a good spouse, they want the children to be educated, they want their parents to be healthy. They want a lovely family. They want, you know, everything in the world. So it's very much around seeking materialistic needs. But more importantly, it is about them saying what they want. So I decide what I want, right? Because I claim to think I know what I want, right? And so it is very transactional to the extent that you basically offer, make offerings to the Lord and you expect to get something in return, either when you are in trouble, which is arthas, and or in anticipation, which is arthartis. So in this case, God is looked at as a wish fulfiller. And essentially, it emanates out of ahankara, which is, I am, you know, I know what I do. I am all powerful. I control my life. So there is some sort of an intoxication with all the worldly things. And there is a ahankara around the fact that we are in control of our lives ourselves, right? So that's one level of bhakti, which is sort of the what you would call mand bhakti, or, you know, the lowest level of bhakti. The second one is around, you know, what I've defined as the spiritual bhaktas, which is the sadhakas, who, like the materialist, who are also materialistic to a large extent, because they live in this transactional reality. But they basically, rather than saying they decide, they say, we ask the Lord to decide. So you decide for me what is right, right? And so that is really kind of a manifestation of the fact that they acknowledge that they are limited, the fact that they only control maybe 1 or 2 or 3 or 5% of their of what they do, and that 95% is a complex kind of you know, constitution around, you know, their prarabdhas and the universe and everything else. And therefore, they are people who believe that Ishvara is a well-wisher rather than a wish fulfiller, and that Ishvara is the best judge. And so when they pray, they would kind of say, you know, please do whatever is good for me, as opposed to give me ABCD, right? And so there is an acceptance of the Vedanta sort of concepts of karma and prarabdha, and there is a full shraddha around it, right? And within these two, which is, I think, what most of us would be, or most of the jivas would be, or not jivas, but humans would be, my feeling is that a vast majority, and I've just picked a number like 95%, are people who are basically praying to get something, right? Or they're asking for something. There are very few, and I'm in that category, because when I pray, I tend to inevitably talk about things which I'm lacking or where I'm struggling. Whereas the 5%, I believe, are people who are essentially saying, you are everything. I leave it to you to decide what is best for me. And I will take what I get, because I don't know what everything that's happening in the world around me. And so I'm a ignorant person, and you know best, so please do whatever is best for me. I'm not going to ask for anything. As long as you do best for me, I'm happy, right? So this is really sort of something that we have seen in the previous kind of chapters and our own reflections. The third category is what I call the highest level of sadhaka, or the uttam sadhaka. Which again, I think in chapter 8 was referred to as an ananya bhakta, where they don't want anything. They just want the God, the Lord. And they believe that if you have the Lord on your side, everything is fine. They don't ask for anything one way or the other, right? And that is sort of coming out of the fact that they have this deep abiding faith in the grace of God. They have a constant remembrance around God, and everything that happens in their life, they are full of gratitude, and there is love and humility in everything that they do, right? So they are in this zone where they are completely sort of surrendering to the Lord, what we call Sharanagati. And what Kunti really says here is, give me sorrow, because her approach, I think, is to say really that if I ask for something, that reflects ahamkara. Whereas when there is pain and sorrow in life, then it leads to vairagyam, which is a stepping stone for achieving moksha.
Absolutely.
Right? So that to me was quite a sort of fascinating aha moment to say that, I mean, frankly, you know, I think I certainly, I mean, in one, trying to be moving towards two, but three is like a completely different level. You know what I mean, right? So I think that to me was really the biggest import of what Kunti said. Otherwise, if you look at these shlokas, I mean, they are full of Advaitic thinking, right? So I just picked up three sort of themes kind of randomly, but you know, one of them is around the fact that Kunti says that you are time, you're the great God who does not have any end or beginning. So that is really sort of talking about Ishvara, which is a concept of consciousness and Maya, right? The second one is around the fact that you are birthless, yet you are born as Krishna, as son of Vasudeva and Devaki, which is really a great example or a great sort of theme around Krishna being God, but taking an avatar as a human to solve the problems on of the universe, sort of, right? So there's a whole sort of element around avatara which I picked up. And the third one is directly related to what Kunti said, to give her vipada being calamity, as a way to, you know, as a way to kind of get out of the cycle of life and death, because when you have sorrow, it leads to vairagyam. And that in a way kind of keeps you close to God and helps you in getting to moksha. So those were like three sort of really lovely themes that I picked up just reading. I mean, there are others, I'm sure. But at the end, the bottom line to me was this whole thing around, you know, bhakti again has multiple levels. And I mean, clearly the way to go is to surrender to the Lord, take his sharanagati, and you know, focus on getting as much vairagya as we can generate, because that will kind of keep us grounded and take us on this path of moksha. I'm going to stop here. So I think that's what I wanted to say.
Excellent, Ajay. Thank you so much for putting this thing together.
Hey, very nice. Sorry, I joined in late, but Ajay, if you can share this now. Thank you.
I will. I've already put that on the group.
Thank you. Yeah.
And interestingly, you know, what you say, the last column, 95% and 5%. Mm-hmm. The way, if I were to remember those percentages, I will think of Pandavas and Kauravas, 5 Pandavas on one side and 100 Kauravas on the other side. And
yeah,
wanting the materialistic and the 5 Pandavas wanting spiritual. But there is only one Kunti who asks for troubles for herself.
Excellent. That's a nice way to put it. Yeah, I mean, if there are any questions, I know Rajesh, you had some further ideas around.
I'll let the group ask you any questions, because it sort of summarizes your understanding of what you did, and I know that you missed the last two sessions. So I'll request the group to ask you any questions or comments what they have, and then we will go to what I want to share. Guns, over to you.
Yeah, can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, it's beautiful structure that you brought to this, Ajay. There's a lot of thinking went into it. So really appreciate that. Hang on. Some background. I'm trying to put my video on.
No, we can hear you.
So what I was thinking was this, coming to the third part of it, right? The third level of sadhaka. We talked about this Kunti asking for sorrow, and why she might be asking for such a thing. And I know we had a discussion around this last time, and I was reflecting upon that. So if you look at the, for example, I think in chapter 2, right, Krishna talks about Chitta Prajna and, you know, how that person behaves and acts and what is going on inside of his mind. This is in complete contrast to that. And I was thinking, like, why would I actually invite this type of a sorrow when I need to have equipoise? And, you know, maybe I'm thinking about this very simplistically, but
yeah,
I think my goal is to have this equanimous attitude towards everything. And then if you go to chapter 5, he says, you know, look at the chandala and the dog and the animals and yourself and all your fellow beings, sentient beings, all is the same thing, right? The so-called complete equal perception. So this goes like, give me sorrow. You know, what is the, what? I still cannot reconcile that. That's what.
And you know, it's a good point. I mean, I struggled with it. I mean, I attended one of the first session actually partly, and I also struggled with this. So why would anyone ask for sorrow? But the way I kind of reconcile this in my mind, Guns, is that, you know, when you have sorrow, you know, we have vairagyam, right? So if, for example, there is this phrase called Shamshan Vairagyam. So when somebody passes away and you go to the cremation ground, you feel that sense of, you know, what is this? You know, this is like, this is the world. What is it worth? So you kind of tend to shed materialistic thoughts at that time, at least. So it is short-lived, of course. But you have that feeling for a few hours, if not more, right? So in some ways, I think the way I kind of anchored it was to say that sorrow kind of makes you reflect on the fact that this world is so incomplete, the whole lack of Purnatvam. And that leads you to kind of inculcate the sense of vairagyam. So the more the sorrows that you have, the more you are, you know, there is lack of delusion to the extent that you're saying, well, it's not all good. There is no way you can seek completeness from the world that we are living in.
Yeah.
And the more vairagya you have, the more you would then transition towards that process of inquiry into yourself. And saying, who am I? Why am I here? So all the questions that we want to ask, we ask ourselves about who am I, life, you know, what is the goal of life, etc., often happens, in my opinion, for two reasons. One is when you have difficulties or sorrows, because that's when you ask the question, why am I here? Or I think with time you realize that, well, this is not giving me lasting happiness, so I need to move towards spirituality. But what is also interesting, if you look at Kunti Stuti, is that it is, on one hand, she talks about vairagyam and, you know, give me sorrow and that's all I ask for you. And then she's been rewarded sort of all the way through. I mean, there are dozens of instances where, you know, this kind of, you know, difficult situation has, and she's always been sort of vindicated, if you will, because she had full faith in Krishna. But equally, a lot of the shlokas actually talks about her quite a deep knowledge of jnana as well, right? It's not as if she is like a bhakta who is just bhakti yoga. She knows who Krishna is. She knows the fact that he's got this transcendental kind of nature, right? The fact that he's Ishvara and we're not, right? So it is a really nice combination of bhakti on one hand, and jnana on the other hand. She's not ignorant about those things. So it's a very powerful character, in my opinion, which is, you know, we talk about multiple yogas and that all of them sort of get together and culminate into moksha. She's an excellent example of that, right? So, I mean, I found the whole sort of, you know, if you look at it in totality, quite fascinating and very much sort of synchronous to how we've been talking about that. It, you know, it's, you know, jnana yoga and bhakti yoga are not two different things. They are all paths to the same goal, and that even if you have bhakti, you need jnana to become enlightened, right?
Yeah.
So she's a, you know, she's a, I mean, I had never thought of Kunti in the same way as I do now. I mean, I always thought of her as like she was the mother of the Pandavas, and that's fine. Okay, so by the way, right? But her character is extremely deep, and it's very profound, actually, the way she's put it all together.
Yeah. Yeah, no, thank you for that. It's a wonderful way to kind of reconcile it. Yeah, and I'm also thinking, like, even if you think about Jesus, right, he suffered quite a bit.
Yes.
But it's a little different, of course. He suffered so that he left the place with a better world kind of thing. He gave a lot of values, etc. But that is also surrounding this sorrow theme.
Yeah, and even if you look at Buddha, I mean, the whole Buddhism and the philosophy came out of the fact that he was questioning, why is there sorrow? And therefore, I need to live that kind of life to appreciate it. And then he seeks nirvana, right? So
yeah,
sorrow is actually quite an integral part of all, at least, I mean, pretty much all religions at a certain level.
Yeah. Yeah, I had another thought, but I'll reserve that for maybe later in our discussion. But thanks, Ajay.
So, Guns, to your question, right? Why sorrow? I know, Mukul, you raised your hand, but if you don't mind me going here. So I think, you know, there is one, I think I mentioned this in the last satsang also. See, if you look at our 24 days in a 24 hours in a day, the way that we spend our time, and that's being captured in the beautiful song on Vithala, okay, which I heard in the temple recently. It goes something like this, you know, during my daytime, I'm translating the song in Kannada, okay, into English. So it says that during my daytime, I end up spending all my time to satisfy my hunger and thirst, which means basically I'm running around on my daytime, and I don't have time to remember you. And during my nighttime, I'm actually asleep, so I don't really know who you are at that point of time. Okay. So, and I have no idea when I'm supposed to, quote unquote, you know, remember you, Bhagawan. And so when you extrapolate that, it, you know, two things happen, right? You know, when during the course of the day, when quote unquote good things happen, you know, it goes back to point number one of this particular chart, what Ajay has, you know, I wanted it, I made it happen. And then you forget the Bhagawan. But yeah. Then when something hits the ceiling, oh no, something, lots of other extraneous factors are conspiring against me to not get me what I want. Okay, that's what we think about it that way. But then you turn it around and then you say, oh, too many things are happening which doesn't go against me. But I know that there is somebody else who can help me get out of this particular mess that I'm in. And then that gives you an opportunity to step back, you know, in the flow of your daily life or the lack of any flow thereof during the nighttime. These are those moments which force you as an individual. When I say you, I mean the euphemistic you, not just you. Which forced you to step back and, you know, look at the grandiosity, look at the grace that can be bestowed on to you by somebody else. And also there's another thing, you know, transition from this in this chart, you know, Ajay obviously put it as 1, 2, and 3. But when Ajay was narrating this, I was thinking about this. There are also instances when people move from 1 to 2 because not necessarily that they will have to become a spiritual sadhakas. There's another condition also. The point is, you know, if someone is extremely logical and they say, oh, what if I get only what I desire? What if somebody else can give me more than what I desire?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's again okay. very selfish in a way. Yeah.
Yeah, because they would have seen some instances where they were asked for something, but they would have gotten more than what they've asked. Which means they've realized, oh, if I ask for something, I'll get it, I know. But if I ask for something, I may get less, I may get more also. Why? when the trigger happens, they will move from 1 to 2, and then when that matures, that will go get to 3.
Yeah.
Muku, nice. You raised your hand.
Yeah, thanks, Rajesh. I think the perspective I have is right. Kunti Stuti is a devotee's praise of Bhagwan. Whereas when Bhagwan speaks, he's an enlightened master giving instructions to a disciple, right? It's a truth or a technique. So when Bhagwan is speaking through Bhagavad Gita, whatever he's speaking is the ultimate truth or a technique for enlightenment. Whereas when Kunti or Arjuna speak, that is more of a devotee expressing a poetic love of Bhagwan. I think, you know, expecting to be a truth to be in that may not be very appropriate, or a technique in those words may not be appropriate. I mean, if you resonate with the way Kunti is singing about Bhagwan, it's just this poetic, beautiful expression. But I personally would not take that as a technique for my enlightenment or as a path or any guide on my journey, right? Because that's Bhagwan is the master here. I mean, devotees and disciples speak about the guru in many ways, and that is their subjective poetic expression. That's how I would view that, my perspective.
And you're right. I mean, Muku. I mean, this, at the end of the day, it is a poetic sort of rendition by, you know, in praise of the Lord, if you will. But you know, one of the things that I found interesting is that these verses are actually a conversation between Krishna and Kunti. Right, and some of the, I mean, what I tried to do is to, you know, look at some of the words and you know, kind of link it to the whole sort of idea of enlightenment and you know, the whole sort of aspect around what would, like Kunsa ask, what does give me sorrow really mean, or what could she have really meant? So yeah, some of it is extrapolation, but it also kind of really brings out the Shraddha that she had in the Bhakti of Lord Krishna.
Yeah, for sure. Agree, yeah.
Okay. So, Guns, you have your hand raised still. Do you have any comments? Rick, you raised your hand.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Rick. I was talking on mute. I will lower my hand, sorry.
Okay.
I did not have anything.
Yeah, go ahead, Rick.
Well, Ajay, first I just want to applaud you. And also, don't sell yourself short. In order to see it this way, you have to have the vision that accommodates it. I want to say also, in the beginning where you talk about the materialistic, what do I seek? The thing is, they don't know what they want. Every want is a desire for happiness. But the real want is to be free of wants. They don't see that. I agree with, I very much like your gradations here. I also want to talk in terms of the give me sorrow in this way. I'm always amazed by the grasp of psychology that these rishis had. And this is another, to me, this says that again. So for example, if you talk to an entrepreneur and ask them, have you learned more from your successes or your failures? What's he going to tell you? If Edison said, because it took 10,000 tries to find out what would work for the incandescent light bulb, 10,000 is a lot. He had a big lab, but nonetheless. So he was asked about it. He said, they basically asked him, how do you not get down about this and how long it's taking and the effort? He said, because every time I fail, I know I have one less thing I have to investigate. So again, it's the same thing. And also psychologically, most people come to Vairagya, to spirituality, because they in some way grasp that the way they're living their life isn't working. And every breath we take is about trying to find fulfillment. But in the moments of happiness, you know, you don't tend to dilate it and ask, where does the happiness really come from? You're just being happy. You're caught up in being happy because that does reflect our nature. Sorrow isn't our nature, and it's meant to hurt. It's meant to sting. You know, it's the Vairagyam booster shot. So, but I agree with your point also when you go from give me sorrow to namaste and the next slide, you've taken enough sorrow that you're stopped looking. You don't need the sorrow to kickstart it. All of life directs you to the Lord. And if all of life directs you to the Lord, you can't be that far away. Also, what Master Nomi used to say, that imagine in terms of Jnanam and Bhakti, imagine there's a big ship coming at you, the point, the prow. One side, if you're looking from the one side, you see Bhakti. If you look from the other side, you see knowledge, Vidya, Jnanam. But it comes to a point, and it's coming right at you with both. And each one encompasses the other. For the aspirant who basically says, Lord, you're everything, I mean, isn't that what knowledge is going to show? So they're linked throughout. But I also think how you pointed out where it was reflected was also very, very nice and very shows the depth of your own understanding of what goes on, what went on here.
Well, thank you, Rick. I mean, yeah, it's very encouraging. But yeah, you're totally right. I think Jnanam and Bhakti do converge, and I think that is the that's an important point here. Thank you.
Awesome. Since we are on charts today, I also have something to share. And if you don't mind, I can kind of take charge of the screen to share what I have. So, you know, when I looked at these shlokas, right, I was trying to draw some parallels between a couple of things that that struck with me, and I'm going to share my screen in a second. Okay. So, of course, I just picked a couple of things relevant from here, from what struck me. The first one is this very famous Mahamrityunjaya mantra, Om Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushti Vardhanam Urvarikam Iva Bandhanan Mrityor Mukshiya Mamrutat. That's what it says. So I read this interpretation by, I think it was Swami Paramarthananda. He talks about this particular word, okay? Urvarukaviva, okay? Apparently, all these goats, right? The bitter god or the cantaloupe or the cucumber, okay? These ones, they are stuck to a vine with a very thin thin connection, okay? And incidentally, what I learned is that nature, that doesn't drop off. You need a gardener to go and cut it with a you know, knife or a pair of scissors, okay? So it's the way that this Swami Paramarthananda explains this is that this urvarukavi bandhana, the attachment what we have as individuals to our to that tree, okay, the tree of family and all that attachment that we have, that needs an external person, a gardener, to come and cut it off. Okay. So now the beauty of what I loved about Kunti Stuti is when you look at, you know, in this particular shloka, what she says, okay, she's acknowledging, you know, as individuals, we will not acknowledge. Yeah, at a theoretical level, you say, yeah, raga, dvesha, bandha are all the very difficult things for us to get over with. That's at a very theoretical level. But to voice it over saying that I am attached to my family, I am attached to my job, I am attached to this, it's really, really hard thing for many people to say. But here, Kunti is saying that. What Kunti is saying that is, I know that I'm attached to this clan of Vrishni. I know I'm attached. Is it in this shloka? No, sorry, not in this shloka. Where is that? Okay, yeah, here, in this shloka. Okay, in this shloka. I know I'm attached to this clan of Vrishni and Pandu. Vrishni is the one where she was born into, which is the same clan as Krishna is born into, the Yadava Kula. Okay, and Pandu clan is the one that she's got married into. So she's saying, she's admitting the fact that I am attached to these two set of families. Okay, I can't cut it off by myself. I want you to cut it off. So in some sense, if you look at it today, if you look at this particular shloka, it's if I were to use a very crude analogy, it's a common man, to use Kunti synonym for a common person, okay, who is not Advaitic, who has not read scriptures and all that. I just kind of making it up to dramatize the effect of Kunti as a person, right? So she is praying to this Lord, saying that I don't have the strength to cut this particular bondage by myself. I want you to cut it off. And more importantly, she's verbalizing where the bondage is for her, which is the most, which actually made me get tears in my eyes, actually, when I read that. I just want to share that one thing with you, okay? Then the other thing that I want to talk about is, some of you know that, you know, I'm learning to chant Dakshinamurti Stotram during this Chaturmasa. So this thing struck me, okay? There's one of the slokas. I mean, Dakshinamurti sloka is a very, stotram is a very beautiful stotram. So in this, it struck me, it goes something like this. Tribhuvana Guru Misham Dakshinamurti Devam Janana Marana Dukkha Chedam Daksham Janana Marana Dukkha Cheda Daksham Namami. Okay? So now, remember this word, okay? Tribhuvana Guru Gurum Isham. Okay? Remember that. Just when I will switch to something else to explain to you. Then the next word is, ignore the second word, Dakshinamurti Devam, ignore that. Then the third word is, Janana Marana Dukkha Cheda Daksham Namami. Janana Marana Dukkha Chedam. Remember, just remember that. That's one thing. Then, of course, in Gita, you know, Bhagavan says, Imam Vivasate Yogam Proktavana Hamavyayam Vivasvan Manave Praha Manu Rikshakave Braveet, which shows in chapter 4 that he acknowledges that he is the Avatara Purusha. And he explains. And then Arjuna goes up and he says, oh, Vivasvan is so old. You are so young. How can you be his predecessor and all that stuff? And then Bhagavan goes and says, Bahuni me vetitani janmani tavada tava charjuna tanyaham vedasarvani latvam vedata. And I don't remember the complete thing now. So he says that. And you remember that particular thing. So now why I'm saying this is that I'm just picking this thing up because, I hope you can still see my screen. Are you able to see my screen?
Yeah.
What are you seeing on the screen now?
The same three slokas, huh?
Okay. That means it's a wrong screen. Okay. I hope you can see it now, right?
Yeah, your notes, right? Yeah.
My notes. So what I did was I tried to, dissect and bisect all these 26 shlokas, like what Ajay did, and he succinctly presented it. I'm presenting it in slightly different format, not so clean format, I would say. So ignore that for the second. Okay. So the two numbering that you would see here, on the right side, you would see 1 to 6. Okay. On the left side, followed by the right bottom side, 1 to 21. Let me first deal with the 1 to 6, right? So, Krishnaya, Vasudevaya, Devaki Nandaya, Nandagopa Kumaraya, Govindaya, Pankajanabaya, Pankajanetraya, Pankajamalaya, Pankajajangraye. Okay? So, these are the 6 plus 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 11 namas, where she's sort of telling to us the qualities of Bhagavan. Okay. Each one of them is a quality of Bhagavan, what she's saying. You know, it's either that it's a identification of who Bhagavan is as perceived by Kunti. Example is, Govindaya, is a talk about Govardhana mountain. He lifts on his little finger and protects the goes. Goes is a Govinda. That's how the name comes for him. And of course, go is also a meaning of the earth. And she's kind of, sort of acknowledging that you come here to save this earth from the adharmic purushas. Okay. Then Krishnaya is obviously a direct reference to saying that you are a dark looking person. Just kind of, making it up. So we don't have to make a lot about what these things mean. It's just that an indication of how she perceives the personified Bhagavan in the form of Krishna. Okay. However, this set of names, which she uses, or which Vyasa uses in the form of to use Kunti as a pretext and then praise to Bhagavan, are the most interesting ones. Okay, Purusha, okay, which indicates Purushaha, the one who is never born, never dies. Okay, Adhyam is there's no birth for him, and Kunti uses that word. Ishwaram, she acknowledges Ishwara, that he is the Ishwara who controls everything in this. And Prakrute Param, he is beyond the Prakruti, beyond, Param is beyond, beyond Prakruti, what we see here. Alakshyam, he is the end goal for everyone. Then Antar Bahiravastitam. So Antar is inside, Bahihi is outside. Stitam, you are situated both inside and outside. Avyayam, come what may, you know, you will never diminish. Hrushikesham, master of senses, sense organs. Jagat Guru, this is where I want to bring the context of Dakshinamurti Stotram. She acknowledges you are Jagat Guru, okay? And Nivrutta Guna Vrittaye, she acknowledges, you know, there are three gunas which constitutes this entire universe in some fashion or the other. And you are Nivrutta, you are away from them. You are beyond them. She acknowledges them, acknowledges Krishna. Okay? Atma Ramaya. And I'm sure all of you, I think it was Gunzu who made the reference. Okay? Of Stita Prajna. Atma Ramaya is a reference to Stita Prajna. When Arjuna asks, Stita Prajnasika Bhasha Samadhistasya Keshava, and Bhagavan goes, Prajahati Yada Kaman, Atmanyeva Atmana Santushtaha, Stita Prajnasta Dochite. He says that, Atma Rama, you are ever satisfied within yourself. And how are you? Shantaya. Okay? You are the master of Kaivalya. Kaivalya means you don't desire anything. You are just within yourself. Okay? And then, Ajay, you pointed this thing out. Kala Kalayatamasmi. Bhagavan says that in Gita. I am Kala. I am the devourer of time. And that's the context in which I also shared the link of that other movie that I mentioned, Telugu movie, Bro. Okay. The Bro, the movie is all about this guy dies. And if you've not read the review of the movie, I'm going to give you the spoiler alert here, right? This guy dies, and then he's the one who thinks that his entire family is dependent on him and he doesn't want to die and all that stuff. But then, you know, there is this Kala who's personified as the god who takes him away. And then he gives him different instances to see how his life would have been if he had changed something and all that stuff. So it's a beautiful movie, watch it. And then finally, you know, he merges within the Kala. That hero merges within the Kala and becomes one with Kala. So Bhagavan is Kala. Then Anadi Nidhanam, okay? Doesn't matter, you know, from the times immemorial, you were the wealth, spiritual wealth, everybody was seeking. Vibhum. Vibhum is this entire universe, what you see, which is all the quote-unquote glories, is you, okay? Vishvatma, okay, you are the innermost God within everybody. Vishvesha, you are the ruler of everybody. Yogeshwara, you know, you are the master of all yogas, okay? Akhila Guru, again, reference to Dakshinamurti Stotra. Bhagavan, you've got all the qualities that qualify you as the Bhagavan. That's what she's summarizing. In a sense, you know, if you look at these numbers of names which are mentioned, these are all Advaitic references to Bhagavan. And these ones, what you would say, are a personal God reference to Bhagavan. And that's where I'm going to stop.
This is beautiful, Rajesh. I think you've captured all the key words, and you're totally right. I mean, this is as much bhakti as much as Advaita. That's beautiful. Thank you.
Hey, very nice, Rajesh. Lots to learn. Yeah, thank you so much. Yeah.
In a way, this Kunti Stuti, I mean, you know, I've been hearing about lots of people reading Bhagavatam, and VP, who's not on the call, actually gave me a copy of it, but I've not been able to get myself to read it, but certainly this is inspiring me to get started. This is a really amazing text.
All right. So that kind of, you know, sort of gets us to, you know, sort of, you know, of course, it was meant to be a discussion, but since Ajay had a slide deck, you know, he went first. And then since I also had some notes, we went first, but it doesn't mean that, you know, we are not looking forward to your aha moments from these slokas. So let's do that.
Hey, Dax, I can just go. One thing I'm just thinking is, you know, there's some significant players in Mahabharata, right? Bhishma, of course, Arjuna, Krishna, and Duryodhana, and some of the characters that we usually remember. And then the what I would say, let's call them, you know, please don't beat me for saying this, but let's say the second layer of characters, like Dushyasan, who had some role to play, but he doesn't have that much screen time. I would also, you know, in one way put Kunti there. She doesn't have much screen time, but the screen time she has, she's done a lot of different things. And then you have people like, you know, if you take the top, I don't want to say top. If you take the, like, the let's say the key people with very dominant screen times, Krishna, Arjuna, Duryodhana, Bhishma, I can't think of anybody else. Maybe Dhritarashtra, just because he appears in Yudhishthira, yeah, definitely. And I'll probably put Dhritarashtra there only because he keeps asking Sanjaya to tell him stuff. And he does a few things. But I just find it amazing that Kunti gets this sudden pedestal because she knows who Krishna is and she knows who Karna is. And she gets to, you know, praise Krishna and Bhagavan and all that. But I have to definitely confess, I never knew about Kunti Stuti before, you know, we brought it up here. I haven't read Bhagavatam, and I'll probably do that. It's in my list, but I have never got to it, like Ajay said. Never realized Kunti had this kind of, you know, depth to her. So I'm just wondering now, all the others in that, let's say, other layers of Mahabharata, what do they have? It's kind of interesting because that's a pretty massive epic.
Yeah.
And let's also not forget Vidura, right? With this the so-called Vidura Nidhi of justice, laws of justice, and so on.
Anyone else? Okay, so it looks like we probably will have to conclude a little early today. And one thing which I missed mentioning was, you know, there was one shloka in Kunti Stuti which struck me as something which would be controversial. Okay. And I will just point out with what shloka it is, and then probably just give me a second. I'm just. There's one shloka where she says about you know, people who don't know who you are and all that. I don't remember which sloka was it.
Just check 14. 14. Just check 14. I'm not sure. I thought it's...
I think it's probably this one. Okay. So, Janma Aishwarya Shruta. Basically, if you're intoxicated with wealth, fame, education, and beauty, you'll never be in a position to even utter your name. Okay. Maybe that's the one. Yeah, I think that's the one. So, I sort of felt that this was a little controversial because even in Gita also it talks about there's one shloka which says that I don't remember the exact shloka now. It says that Vaishyas and Shudras will not be able to understand you. It says that, and that seems very controversial. And even in Dakshinamurti Stotram also, it says a similar kind of a thing. Okay, and the reason why I bring that thing up, saying that it's something that we need to understand, that it's not about. I don't think the scriptures are saying anything about the biological gender or anything like that. It's about the mental attitude. So it's not about women can't reach. Bhagawan, that's not what the scriptures say. I think that's a lot of people misinterpret it. But I think what it means is that the fickle-mindedness that's related with that quality, you cannot reach Bhagawan. That's what it says. So I just want to make sure that, we don't misinterpret that.
Rajesh, just one other way to look at that is, right? I know this came up even in, I think Spurti brought this up in the first session of Kunti Stuti about women and, what is a reference point here. One way to look at it is that there is, when it comes to, this universe, creation, spirituality, etc., there is only one Purusha, and that is the Parama Purusha, right? So if you look at it from that context, he's the only one, who's to be understood and to be revered, respected, et cetera, et cetera. Everybody else is making an attempt towards that. So it's not about the, biological gender that we normally refer to, but there is only one Purusha, and that Purusha is, Brahman. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the word Purusha can be misleading in that sense,
Yeah.
I mean, the one thing which sort of caught my attention was how effortlessly Kunti sort of goes between calling him Purusham and Prakrute Param on one hand, and then as son of Devaki and Vasudeva on the other. So just that move between sort of the two sort of realities, if you will. It's quite interesting. I mean, and again, just generally, if you look at sort of the Mahabharata, I think, based on his actions and everything that Krishna did, I think the fact that he was Ishvara was something that probably dawned on pretty much everyone. I mean, it wasn't like a secret, I would like to think.
No, it was never not a secret. I think there was enough, signs of divinity everywhere.
Exactly.
It was all over the place, but just that the Yogamaya energy is so strong that, you still start doubting and, correct. Not really, falling in place. It's basically the same thing, of the, rusted iron will never get attracted to the magnet, whatever it is, right? So, but I think there were enough and more signals everywhere about his signs of divinity. And
even with the Kauravas, for that matter, when he does the So, it's not like, yeah, exactly. It's about ignorance rather than anything else. Sorry.
Yeah. So, but, at the same time that he would, there would be signs of divinity in his avatar. And all of a sudden, very quickly, he would come back to being a normal person, like, what the avatar is. So that is exactly where the, illusion starts to come in, right? Say, you know, he's somebody like us only, right? So that's the kind of play that this entire thing is all about. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually, Ajay, you know, what you said reminded me of this thing, right? So when, you know, actually, two things. One is Krishna is actually not born the way that human beings are born. That's number one. And incidentally, if you go back to all the quote-unquote the Dashavataras, none of the avataras, the Bhagavan takes birth in the human way. The species, whichever he takes birth, you know, he's born into, he never takes that. So it's always Ayurveda, like, you know, it's totally different. That's one thing. Second thing is, apparently when Krishna is born to Devaki, he's born with four hands. Okay? Mm. And then he tells Devaki, saying that this is the reason that I've come. Actually, before he's born, he gives darshan to Devaki Vasudeva and says that I'm going to be born now. And, you know, then you, I will take care of, you know, basically, you had asked me for a boon, so I'm born now. And then after he's born, when Devaki sees him, she sees him with four hands. Okay. And then apparently she says, maybe not immediately after he's born, or maybe later on when Krishna meets her, I don't exactly remember. She says, you know, till such time Kamsa is dead. Okay. Can you please retract two hands and be with two hands? Okay. So till Krishna kills Kamsa, Krishna has only two hands. And as soon as Kamsa is killed, he brings back his other two hands and he's with four hands. And he was the only person who had four hands during that time.
Okay. I didn't realize that. Hmm. Interesting.
Which is a sort of, to Subbu and your points, like the divinity was already manifesting at physical level also, not just his, what of that, you know, great Leela, what he did, but even at the physical level, but people were not able to recognize it.
Guns, you have a question?
You're muted, huh, Guns?
Yeah, thank you, Subbu. Yes, I was. I don't know if it is a question or not, but this keeps coming up in our mothership group, right? I'm sorry if I go off on a tangent, just feel free to stop me. But this, some of the things that are said in the Bhagavatam, in the Puranas, you know, I think Talwar brought this up. I'm saying his name because he participated, and he'll probably be back in our discussion here. He brought this up saying there's a lot of things that are said in the Puranas, including Bhagavatam, that may not really gel with or converge with what Vedanta is talking about. So we should be careful about how we interpret the Puranas, because there's a lot of, you know, almost opposite things being said, or things that are probably not suitable for us to look at or practice in our daily lives today, you know, because some of these customs might have existed. So Guntax, I'm talking about what you were saying, this three Brahmins and all that stuff. I mean, these things have been exploited, right? So, and these things might have existed. So, and of course, they might have been misinterpreted and so on. But they did happen. So what I'm saying is, if we go and say, tell somebody like Sandeep saying, no, it has been misinterpreted, I'm sure we are going to hear saying, hey, no, but this is fact. This is what the world is. You know, people still practice these things and it's not right. So, yeah, it is a controversial topic, but I just wanted to say that that's what we will hear. And saying that it has been misinterpreted is not going to resolve that question that is out there, right? That's it's just a point I want to talk.
Yeah, I think the only comment I would make on that, Guns, is that, you know, this phrase that little knowledge is dangerous, I think it manifests itself because our scriptures are so vast and deep. And so whenever I cannot reconcile anything in my mind, I look at it as my sort of shortcoming as opposed to scriptures. I've only read like a minuscule part of it, right? So.
Oh, yeah, same here. Yeah.
Yeah, so context, I mean, you know, for us to kind of pass judgment on the scriptures that there was something wrong or otherwise is kind of a bit foolhardy.
Completely agree.
That is true. That is true, Ajay. I know what you're saying, but you will have people questioning these.
No, I agree. I mean, that would be my response to most of them, you know, to say, look, neither do you nor do I know the full story, so let's not argue on something which we don't fully understand.
Yeah. Got it. Okay. I just wanted to make a comment. It wasn't really a question.
See, I think Guns, you bring in a point because sometimes it's easier, even if you haven't read the, you know, entire scriptures and the vast scriptures that are there. Sometimes it's easy to pick inconsistency if they exist and they seem to exist, right? So that's exactly what people are trying to do. I think the bigger point of why we are doing all this is to see how much of this we are able to take into our daily lives and, you know, improve ourselves. Because end of the day, everybody's journey is individualistic. I mean, in the sense, even if you have a guru, you have God in front of you, even Krishna had, Arjuna had Krishna telling him everything. But at the end of the day, he had to walk his path, right? So I think if you look at it from that perspective, you know, the way to look at these things are to see how much of, you know, learning I can take from this. What are the kind of virtues that I can sink into? And how do I bring this into my daily life to make me a better person? If that is the attitude, I think you will not worry about some here and there, you know, mentions here. Because the interpretation, like Mukund also pointed out, right, can be very different, you know, when people are being spoken to. So there is a speaker, there is a receiver, and there is a medium, right? So all the three can be, you know, result in certain, you know, interpretations which may be very different from what other people have spoken to, right? The same Kunti Stuti we are hearing, now we are hearing an interpretation with Ajay and Rajesh. I have taken a lot of learning from that, right? So I think our attitude has to be that, how is it that I can learn from this and make myself a better person? And, you know, how do I attain Chitta Shuddhi? How do I move forward? I think that's the, you know, attitude to take. And once somebody does this, then all this will become very trivial. You know, if there are some little bit of things that I don't understand. Yeah.
Beautifully said, Subodh.
Yeah, beautiful, Subodh. Thank you for that. Yeah. Focus on the learning.
Yeah.
And focus on self, you know, improving ourselves.
Sure.
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, this is not an intellectual exercise. It is
correct.
A...
We have to cross the intellect, right? So somebody was saying,
intellect,
right?
Part is probably the easier part, yeah? Yeah.
So I heard, I think Rick also mentioned one statement. Did I hear that last time? That is on the mind, saying there is a nature of the mind to move from one place to the other. What are you trying to control the mind, right? So similarly, it's the nature of the intellect to discriminate. You know, this is right, this is wrong, you know, this is different, that is different, you know, that is the nature of the intellect. So what we're trying to do is to surpass these two. So,
Good news is while using them.
Yeah.
Sorry?
While using them.
Yeah, while using.
Yeah. Because I think, you know, that's the tool that we have to use rather than say, not use them. Yeah, and also the power of satsang, it's really good because the discipline of, at least I find this, you know, I'm forced to, you know, I'm forced to be more conscious not to wing it. Unlike my quote-unquote other times, sometimes I do wing it in my other meetings, but here I can't do that.
Actually, there is one shloka which I keep getting, I get a daily quote of, you know, Bhagavad Gita in a different group, okay, and I think I'll just read out. I think the sloka I'm referring to is 10.9. Machittaha matgata pranaha bodhayanta parasparam. Okay, katiyantacha mam nityam tushyanticha ramanticha. That is, with their minds and So basically, it exalts the satsang. Okay, it says basically, with their minds fixed on me and lives surrendered to me, my devotees remain ever contented in me. They derive great satisfaction and bliss in enlightening one another about me and conversing about my glories, which is exactly what, you know, was happening here. So I think there's a mention, 10.9 is a shloka. Yeah.
That's why some amount of repetition of what we do here is okay, according to me. It's perfectly fine because it sort of enhances the shravanam and manam.
But if you look at it from the principles are, very similar, right? I mean, but the interpretations and the, connections that each one does it in a different way. That's exactly the beauty of it, that we are able to, sort of imbibe this. So if you are again going back to Gita, Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu Mamanusmara, this is one way of actually connecting with the Lord for all the things and the actions that you actually do. Yeah.
All right. Any other comments from anyone else? Okay. So maybe if you don't mind, all of you, we'll conclude with the Trayambakam Yajamahe shloka today. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, Trayambakam Yajamahe Sugandhim Pushtivardhanam Urvarukamiva Bandhanam Mrityor Mukshiyam Amrutat. Om Shanti 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 Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om.
What's the plan right. next week?
So next week, I had a question. Next week is a long weekend. I will post a note in the group, because Krishna and I, we are planning to present next week. But if there is no enough attendance, we would rather cancel the session for next week and then, do it the following week.
No, we are fine. I'm fine. I mean,
no, India must be fine, not the US. US folks, we have a long weekend. So I do not know how many of us are not there. So we will figure the thing out. I will do a post. Please do a thumbs up or, based on the number of thumbs ups, we will decide.
Yeah, we'll do a poll and see who we get the corona or not. Let's do a quick poll and see if you've got corona or not.
Yeah. For next week. Okay.
Yeah.
Because I don't want the sessions to...